This is a True Faith podcast. I'm Norman Riley, and I'm overjoyed to be joined once again by Newcastle United legends, Keith Gillespie and Mark Corby, to discuss part four of Keith's career as a professional footballer. Keith, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Can't complain.
Glad to hear it. Mark, how are you?
Spot on.
Spot on. That's what we like to hear. God, such positivity. So we ended part three just before the Barcelona game. So I think, you know, going into that game, we may as well talk about the, you know, briefly about the 3-1 loss to Wimbledon the previous Saturday. And then I guess if that had any impact on how you were feeling in the build-up to the Barca match, you know, were you confident, fearful, confident of being picked, Keith? You know, and just everything about it, really how it was coming into the stadium that night. The game itself, obviously, you played out your skin. Just give us as much insight as you can, really.
Well, obviously, it wasn't the best of preparations, losing to Wimbledon. You know, that was a really, really poor performance, and especially going into your first ever Champions League game, the club's first Champions League game. So, you know, we were obviously, I'm sure, a little bit fearful of playing the mighty Barcelona. You know, you only had to look at some of the names that they had. You know, Luis Figo and Rivaldo, probably the two biggest names on that side. So, I'm sure there was a little bit of fear going into that game, considering how poorly we'd played against Wimbledon. But I sort of just remember arriving at the ground. I can't really remember whether I knew I was going to be playing or not, you know, the day before, or you know, it's a bit of a blur, that side of it. But obviously, fortunate enough that you know, I was picked to play. I remember Tino actually turning up late for the game, and you know, there was talk that he might not even play then because, you know, he had turned up late, but thankfully Kenny stuck by him and played him, because it could have been a different result altogether. But, you know, just the whole evening, and, you know, going out and hearing that Champions League music, you know, it's what you want to hear as a footballer. I'm sure it's what fans, you know, want to hear as well. And, you know, obviously, we know how the game went. It was just one of those games where everything went right for me. I think... you know, Sergi, who was a Spanish left back, who was marking me. I think back sort of 1997, you know, you had the odd game on Sky Sports at the time. You know, not like it was recently, where you sort of had four or five on a weekend. You sort of just had the one here and there at times. So I didn't really know an awful lot about him. I'd seen him play in the Euros for Spain. But it was a case of, you know, my strength was obviously my pace. And if I was quicker than the fullback I was up against, it was just a case of dropping the shoulder and you know, kicking the ball in front of me and getting there first and trying to get crosses in. And, you know, thankfully for me, I was able to do that on a couple of occasions. And Tino, who was, you know, absolutely unplayable that night, you know, managed to get in the end of him. But I know they came back towards the end. But I think in terms of the performance, it was a performance that probably nobody seen that coming whatsoever, especially, you know, coming on the back of a defeat to Wimbledon. But I think it would have been an absolute, you know, travesty if they had to come back and got something out of the game, because, you know, we sort of took it, you know, to Barcelona and you know, for an hour, you know, we were, you know, head and shoulders above them. And I know they did come back with two goals, but as I said, it would have been an absolute tragedy if we didn't win the game.
It was absolutely spectacular. From a fan's perspective, I had the great joy, and I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast, talking about one of the games that I was living in Crewe at the time, and I was in these student digs, and in my room I had this TV that was, you know, if you picked it up now, you'd probably slip a disc in your back, given the weight of it. And I had like an aerial on top of the telly, so it was really difficult trying to get a good picture, because I think it was an ATV. Yeah. And I managed to get a half-decent picture. And you mentioned the Champions League music there. Obviously, as a player, I can't even begin to comprehend what kind of a rush that must have been. But for me, hearing that, it immediately made me think of sort of 6 years earlier, 7 years earlier. In particular, a season under Jim Smith, I think 1991, where we were just atrocious. And that only being 6 years earlier, I couldn't quite get my head around it. And when the third goal went in from that cross that you whipped in and Tino headed it in, I burst into tears. I absolutely burst into tears with a complete emotional drain of all of it. It was just unbelievable. And from a fan's perspective, I mean, one of the greatest nights of my life. So cheers for that, Keith. Much obliged, mate. Mark, it'd be great to hear you, how your take on it, Mark.
It was just what I was actually getting goosebumps when you were both talking there, because it was simply, it's a cliche, but it's what dreams are made of, isn't it, Norman? As a supporter, you know, you hope and pray to play against these type of teams. And as you said before, a few years earlier, we were, you know, on the brink of relegation to third division, man, you know. And one of the biggest memories I've got is Oasis were in town as well, weren't they? They were doing two nights at the arena had not long opened, and I had tickets for the gig. I was a massive Oasis fan, and but it was no competition. I know some people who still went to the gig and gave up the match, which I just couldn't get my head around. But I remember loads about the night. You know, I remember getting the bus, people getting off at Hewith, at Newcastle, and people going in one direction, and the majority of us going, if the lads going to the match, and the noise. It was the noisiest I've ever heard St. James's Park, and even that includes with the ground extension. You know, it was just for non-stop, you know, probably about 20 minutes building up to the game as well. It was like a throwback to the 80s, where people used to get in early, you know, make sure they had a good spot on the terraces, and the noise just built and built and built to the point where, as you say, when the Champions League music was played, it was like, this is it. And even watching it back now, there's obviously snippets of it on YouTube, and you just can't help but, you know, go, you know, a little bit like Marty McFly going back in time, you know, and just getting lost in the moment. And, you know, the Gillespie-Asprilla partnership that night was just absolutely phenomenal. And Keith, you mentioned Tino being, you know, on fire. You were as well, mate. I mean, I think you're downplaying exactly, you know, you've seen you drop the shoulder and you ran, but no, I think that the second goal, but the first cross in particular, you know, it was a sudden burst of pace, wasn't it? Going past the fullback, you skinned him and whipped that ball in. And it was just, the noise for the first one was deafening, and the second one was just a different level. But when the third one went in, because you picked the ball up in your own half, didn't you? And you just went at him, skinned him, and it was just a perfect cross, and I think everyone was just in disbelief. And even though Barca did pull two goals back, and it was nail biting towards the end, it was relief, but it was just one of those instant moments where you just thought, I've just witnessed a massive, massive moment in Newcastle United's history. And as Norman said, Keith, you know, you wrote your name into Newcastle history that night, mate, and I can't thank you enough.
I think with the third goal, I think if you sort of say, or I mean, it's maybe about 10 yards in my own half, I've sort of just dropped the shoulder. But I think by the time that I actually crossed the ball, I only have about 3 touches of the ball then, because it was just a case of making sure I got it far enough out of my feet. And it probably could have went on a little bit further to actually cross it, but I sort of looked up. I'd sort of just seen Tino was the only one in the middle there. And to be fair to Tino, he actually made a great run, because he feinted the dart towards the front and then held back, and the defenders started. They were ball watching then, and they didn't know where he was, and he was just in between them then. But I think I probably crossed it earlier than what I normally would have, but that was because I was absolutely wrecked, I think, you know, from the actual run. And I think even about a minute or 2 minutes later, the goalkeepers made an unbelievable save down low, and from Tino, from across that I put in again, and it could have been 4. Yeah. I think when you look back on your career, and you know, people say, what's the best game you ever had? You want to be able to say it was in the Champions League against a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. So I feel very lucky that, you know, I'm able to say that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Keith, I'm going to massage your ego a bit more here, mate, right? But, and I'm going to give an opinion based on zero evidence, completely subjective. But I think a lot of fans would say in football, there's something that you like to see. Floodlight, a midweek game, crowd really up for it, a winger flying down the wing, shirt out, like a slight winger whipping a cross in for a bullet of header. It is one of the most beautiful artistic moments in football. Yeah. And you did it against Barcelona, mate. So There you go. I'm breaking up here. Honestly, God, can we stop now? We'll move on. Honestly,
We'll have to
move on. Otherwise, I'll be fetal on the floor crying in a minute. So, post Barca, you know what? Looking at the results, 3 wins from 4 games. Only a 1-0 defeat, and that was away at Chelsea, which, you know, isn't a disgrace.
Yeah.
A 2-0 win over Hull and a fantastic draw away at Dynamo Kiev, who, you know, that team, I mean, they spanked Barcelona a couple of times. I think they got to the quarters, Rebrov, Shevchenko. I would love to get your thoughts on that game because, again, we've mentioned back in the 90s and 80s, playing away in Eastern Europe, there was always this kind of element of danger to it. And this particular night, Ukraine had only been an independent country, I think, for 5 or 6 years. And it was one of those places where I knew it wasn't a map, but because it had been part of the Soviet Union for so long, I had no real idea of it. And I guess that was a really unique experience for you, and especially because I think, what was the 100,000 people there?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd actually played against Ukraine for Northern Ireland, both home and away before that, you know, being back out there to play against Kiev. So I knew it was the same actual ground. So I'd actually played there before. But in terms of that night, you know, we started awful, so we did. We were 2-0 down before we even got out of the traps. And then an unlikely hero, John Beresford, manages to get sort of 2 goals towards the end of the game. And we probably didn't deserve a draw. It's such a difficult place to go, Eastern Europe, to play football. You know, I've played it numerous times in Northern Ireland. You go to the likes of Moldova and you go to Latvia, you know, countries like this, Lithuania, Ukraine. It is such a difficult place to go and play your football. So to come away with a sort of 2-2 draw, you know, 4 points from a first 6 in what was 2 really, really difficult games, you know, was a fantastic return. And I think it was just a shame that you know, the games in between those that we didn't get the sort of desired results that we needed. You know, PSV Eindhoven home and away was disappointing, but you know, we were very low on numbers, and I think even the PSV Eindhoven game at home, I played centre forward that night because we had nobody else. Tino wasn't fit. Alan obviously was injured. You know, so when you're missing players like that, you know, you are going to struggle. But you know, to go away to Kiev and get the result that we did against a team that was a top team. You know, they obviously qualified from the group. The disappointing thing from our point of view was that they qualified from the group, yet we drew away with them and we beat them easily at home. You know, so that was a sort of disappointing thing for us. But, you know, it was I think it was just incredible just to be involved in the Champions League. Because as you say, you rewind 5-6 years, you know, nobody would have ever thought that was going to happen, that, you know, just avoiding the relegation to the old third division then, and then 5-6 years later, we're in the Champions League. I don't think anybody could have seen that coming.
Absolutely not. But I'll tell you what, Mark, before we kind of move on to the wider season with regards to the league and obviously the FA Cup run, we'll wrap up the kind of Champions League. Yeah, what were your overall opinions of it? You know, obviously we saw the Barcelona win, a good win against Dynamo, as Keith mentions, with a frankly outrageous Stuart Pearce free kick. I think he hit it from about 85 yards. What are your recollections, mate? And were you? I remember feeling really disappointed at the PSV results, and being, you know, devastated that we were knocked out in the group stages. On reflection, you've got to think, well, actually, it was my first time in the Champions League, and it was a tough group. And we weren't particularly in a good place at that point, you know. But back then, I do remember feeling very sad about it.
I think I share your thoughts there. Disappointed, but when you look at it, you know, as Keith mentioned before, he was playing up front in games. We had Ian Rush playing up front in games. John Dahl Thomason, who, you know, was a bit of an unknown at the time, he was playing up front. It was a testing time. It was a transformational time on a Kenny Dalglish. We were grinding out 1-0 victories as a rule. I think it's one of those where, when you look back now, yes, it was disappointing not to get through to the next stage, but no one can ever take away that Barcelona victory away from us. You know, in as much as it may sound small time to some clubs, you know, when we sort of over-celebrate games like the 5-0 against Man United and obviously this Barcelona game, you know, when the anniversary comes around, you get a spring in your step. It's a brilliant memory. But it's true for Newcastle because we haven't had many moments of success. So these sort of victories are that fondly remembered that you do want to pop on YouTube and watch Keith Skin, the fullback, and Tino bang them in. At the time, yes, disappointing, but I think there was that much going on in regards to Dalglish's, you know, loss of the strikers and the way he was changing the team. It wasn't really a surprise. But as I say, sitting here now, what, 23 years later? Christ, 23 years. Talking about it, and you still get the goosebumps, and I'm still smiling here now just talking about it. So you're disappointing, but you can't take it away.
Absolutely. 23 years later, yet I'm still only 27, it's odd. I think just to quickly develop on what you said there, you're right. You know, you look back now, and all I think about when I think of Newcastle United's first appearance in the Champions League is that win. I don't think about the fact we got knocked out of the group stages. It's that's irrelevant, yeah. You know, because we haven't won a European Cup, because we don't get a, you know, we don't challenge regularly in the Champions League, that game it stands out, and it'll always stand out. So the fact we didn't go through is irrelevant to the memories that have been made based on that game. So the league, you know, we did all right. I mean, we were in seventh, you know, by November with only 3 defeats in 13. We got tanked 4-1 away at Leeds. But it just started going wrong. And for me, I remember watching the away defeat at Bolton. And Bolton, obviously, I think it was the first season back in the Premier League for a while. And maybe Colin Todd was the manager. Yes. And I remember we lost to a Nathan Blake goal. And I just remember it being a really bad performance. And for me, something that night just didn't seem right. And obviously, you know, the rest of the season, four wins in the remaining 25 games. Keith, you know, an easy question would be, what went wrong? But, you know, just tell me how it played out for you the rest of the season. In the league alone, we're not going to the cup run yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you only have to look at where we finished in the league. Was it 13th or 14th, yeah. Maybe?
Yeah.
Is that what it was, 13th, 14th maybe? You know, you sort of think the previous two seasons we'd come second. So it was such a sort of fall from grace that just the performances were just not good enough. And, you know, I think at times you can blame, you know, when you don't have Alan Shearer fit for a lot of that season too, I know he came back, you know, after Christmas, but, you know, he still found his feet because it was such a horrific injury that he had. You know, you had Tino out at times as well, and we mentioned before that, you know, we're playing Ian Rush up front, who obviously, you know, is in his elder years, let's put it. You know, I played up front as well. So, you know, you can blame things like that, but, you know, just performances on the pitch were just not good enough. You know, it's hard to sort of, you know, point out and say what actually went wrong. You know, you look at the sort of, we beat Barcelona on the Wednesday, and, you know, you go to a difficult place like West Ham on the Saturday, and you grind out a 1-0 victory, and John Barnes scored that day, and, you know, everything's looking rosy. And then, you know, you just get a couple of really poor results, really poor performances, and it affects everyone. And, you know, it just wasn't good enough the whole season then, the rest of that season. I know we had the joys of actually qualifying for the Champions League, but as far as league form went, you know, that is your bread and butter. You know, and we wanted to be challenging because we felt that we could challenge. And, you know, it just never materialised that season. And it was disappointing. Obviously, the cup run made up for that. But, you know, when you talk about finishing second and challenging for the league 95-96 and then coming second 96-97, for us to sort of finish 13th, 14th, whatever it was just not good enough from where we had come from. You know, we should have been still challenging for things.
It's interesting, the Dalglish era, that season in particular, and you mentioned, you know, obviously the Champions League, the fact that we had Rush up front, the squad had been overhauled in the summer. We've spoken about that And I think overall, the Dalglish era was a really poor one. But me and Mark have done a podcast previously, and I think I'm a little bit more sympathetic to that particular era under Dalglish than he is. And one of my, let's call it excuses, is the fact that we were in the Champions League. You know, you look at the league form, and as I say, 7th in November with only 3 defeats in the opening 13 games, but we had games in hand. Because of the Champions League, it was, I think, like there was one stage there was like 2 or 3 games in hand on the other teams who weren't there. And part of me thinks, if we hadn't been in the Champions League, I wonder if that might have impacted on the league season. It probably wouldn't have done, but you know, the mind always kind of wanders and thinks, well, you know what, you've got a relatively thin squad being spread over some massive games in the Champions League, and then you're having to go, as you say, on the Saturday and playing a bread and butter league game. And I could see how it might have been difficult. But Mark, I'm sure you don't share my sentiments, mate, and I'd love to hear how the season panned out when you thought the league went wrong.
It was pretty disastrous, wasn't it? We couldn't score goals. We couldn't buy a goal at one point. I think before Christmas, I think it was something like 1 or 2 goals in about 8 games. Off the top of my head, it was shocking, really. And you've got to look at it from a point of view where, you know, it's a results business. And if we didn't have that cup run, you know, you might suggest that the fans may have turned on Dalglish. And don't forget as well, I'm sure there was a game against Barnsley towards the end of the season. It might have been over the Easter weekend, and that was a real 6-pointer. If we had have been beaten that day, we would have been right amongst it. And but fortunately that day, I think we won 2-1. And one of the reinforcements that had come in, Andreas Anderson, I believe, scored that day. Which that's another question as well. You know, when you can question Dalglish's wheel and deal in the transfer market, he got a fair few right, but he got a hell of a lot wrong. And you've got to wonder who he was looking at when they found out that Andreas Anderson was around about his 8th or 9th choice. You know, who was he going for, and why did he settle for Anderson? Who, I mean, Keith is not going to likely to slag off any of his ex teammates, but ultimately, he's a supporter. He just didn't another one who was coming from abroad who just didn't cut it. You know, Gary Speed, fantastic signing, but he played him on the left side of midfield at first. Granted, that's where he started his career at Leeds, but by then Speed was a box-to-box midfielder. And Andy Griffin coming from Stoke, but you know, within weeks he was in the first team because he needed that sort of tough tackling defender. And then Griffin went on to have a half decent career at Newcastle and also did well in the Champions League a few years later. But you know, you've just got to look at the whole season, and I genuinely think Dalglish would have got a fair bit of stick if it wasn't for that FA Cup run.
Yeah, no, I think I just actually remembered when you mentioned the Bolton game and about us actually having a few games in hand. You know, we're sitting in 7th. When we were down to play Bolton and we stayed overnight, myself, David Batty, and a few other lads went to the UK Open in Preston to watch the snooker final. It was Ronnie Sullivan and Stephen Hendry, and. I remember we bumped into Geoffrey Archer. We were sort of in a private room, and I couldn't believe Geoffrey Archer's knowledge about football, because he was actually able to tell us that we had such and such games in hand, and if we won them, we would have went to whatever position it was. That's something I didn't actually know, that Geoffrey Archer was sort of that into his football, but he knew that Newcastle, if they won their games in hand, could have went. I can't remember what place we would have went to if we won them, but. It's just something that sort of came into my head there, that Geoffrey Archer's knowledge of
outstanding
of where we were in the league and where we would have been if we'd have won our games in hand.
Was that pre Nick or post Nick? Had he just spent his time inside, or was it?
No, I think it was pre.
I'll tell you what, lads. Oh, sorry. I was just going to say before we actually do move on. Sorry, Mark. I'd like to just mention Gary Speed quickly. The reason being that, Keith, and this is no disrespect to you, you know, we've worked together for a while now, and I love you with great depth, mate. But Gary Speed is probably overall my favourite of a Newcastle United player. I just absolutely loved him. I loved his work rate. I loved his professionalism. I loved his headers were just beautiful to watch. And he was just a wonderful, wonderful servant for the club. And I was gutted when we sold him, even though he was, 36, I think. And, you know, his death was just a huge tragedy. And I would just like to, I suppose, get your opinion on what he was like as a teammate, because there has literally been nothing but praise for him. And it would be interesting to hear you, I suppose, your take on him.
Yeah, at Speedo, I mean, nobody had a bad word to say about Speedo. He was the ultimate pro. Fantastic to have around the dressing room. You know, great knowledge. And, you know, what a great player as well. Right from when he was at Leeds all the way through, going to Everton, he was fantastic there. And then at Newcastle, incredible player. I was fortunate enough that when he left Newcastle, he came to Sheffield United, and I was at Sheffield United, so I had him as a teammate again. The whole thing surrounding his death, I'll never forget hearing the news. And it's one of them that you sort of still think about now, and you sort of still say to yourself, is that true? I can't believe it, because, just such a nice, down-to-earth person who never had a bad word to say about anyone, but a great pro and a great teammate. And as we say, such a tragedy that, what happened to him. And as I say, it's something that I still think about, regularly, when you see sort of the anniversary of his death coming up, and it's just something that plays on your mind for quite a while afterwards again, about how it all sort of came about, so not, as I say, nothing but good to say about Gary Speed, and if you speak to anyone, they would say exactly the same.
No, not
sorry, Mark, did you thank you for that, Keith?
God bless his soul. On a more positive note, I do recall being at a talk-in with your good self a few years ago for Martin Hardy's Touching Distance book. And am I right in thinking that when you played up front against Blackburn, I'm sure you said that night that would have been possibly your best goal for the club? Would that be right?
Yeah, I think so. there's a funny story attached to it, because I had about 10 or 12 friends who were over to watch the game, and I told them I was playing up front, so they thought they'd have a few quid on me to score the first goal. So lo and behold, after about 10 minutes, I scored sort of, I think it was two more kids by, I had a big long ball, and I controlled it on my thigh and just volleyed it into the far corner past Tim Flowers, and we drew the game 1-1 each, but I remember coming into the players' lounge afterwards, and I thought the boys would be happy, and they all had these glum faces, and I says, what happened? Did you not back me? And they said, well, when they were filling in, the fixed odd coupon, they filled in the box below by mistake, and it was Des Hamilton they backed instead of me. So they were a little bit gutted with that one, but they had the same luck as me at gambling. But the size of things.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, well, we can move on the cover. And I tell you what, just before we do, quickly, but we've kind of glossed over the league because there's not really much memorable about it. But we mentioned Bolton earlier on. Let's talk quickly about the Bolton game at home. That was the game that Tamir Ketsbaya absolutely lost the plot, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And were you playing that game, Keith? I couldn't check.
I played.
What was it like on the pitch?
It was mental, obviously it was a winner. We won 2-1, but I do actually sort of remember that game as if we were sort of battering them, and it felt like we just couldn't get, the winner. And then all of a sudden, there was a bit of a, I think Alan headed one at the back post. There was a bit of a scramble, and Tamiri's obviously put it in the back of the net. And I think everybody knows what followed after that. And we're so delighted to score in the last minute. It's such a great feeling to actually score in the last minute, when it turns out to be the winner. And everyone's sort of trying to jump on top of him, and he's just pushing each other, pushing everyone away, trying to get his boots off. The top went off. I think it was Alessandro Pistone went and got his top or his boots or whatever it was. But I think afterwards in the change room, Kenny went absolutely mad with him, because this was all directed towards Kenny, because Tamiri wasn't playing. He wasn't happy. He wasn't playing. And Kenny went through him after the game in the dressing room, because, it was such a weird reaction to scoring the winner, that you just want to throw your boots off and your top. And I actually remember from the kickoff, the ball came to him. and he had all the time in the world, and he just absolutely rifled it into the far stand. You know, he was just full of emotion, and you were just like thinking, nobody around him at all, just hit it maybe 50, 60 yards across the pitch into the far stand, you know, and it was a crazy reaction. But as I say, Kenny obviously put him in his place after the game.
Definitely not the type of player that you would think would have gone on to have quite a successful career in management, because he always gave the impression as a player that if you said the wrong thing to him, he would jump on your face and just chew it off. But obviously that's not the case. And I can only imagine one of Kenny Dalglish's rollickings, like, I bet it's full of fury and anger.
Absolutely. I think to Murray, because I used to teach Tino some of the sort of the words, and Tino would have sort of been calling him Baldy all the time. And, Tino had no idea. Tino's bald himself, isn't he? But Tino had no idea what he was saying. And Samuri wasn't happy with him every time.
That was a hell of a slaphead that he had. We'll go on to the cup run, and I'll come to you first, Mark. Obviously, a formulaic away win at Everton, 1-0 with an Ian Rush goal from an inch out, I believe. It's the Stevenage game. For you, this was quite a seminal moment in Newcastle United's recent history, and I'd love to hear you talk about that again. And then obviously, Keith wants Mark spoken to get your take on the whole Stevenage, well, what would you call it? Soap opera, I guess, would be really interesting as well from an inside that first down, point of view.
We've touched on this before, but it was the last time we would see Tino in the black and white shirt. He hobbled off, never to be seen again. So it was quite disappointing that his last goal was actually that hat-trick against Barca. So it's quite sad that his last couple of months was just nowhere near the levels that he had performed in that game against Barca and in a few games prior to that. But the Everton game, we scraped through, didn't we, 1-0. Remember being an awful game against a pretty average Everton team. We got through. The Stevenage game, for me, it was the moment where the media simply lost any love for Newcastle United. It was quite embarrassing to watch it unfold, you know, on the telly, on Newsnight. I know the... I don't like to talk too much about a certain newspaper called The Sun, but they seem to be in the element. They were promoting Stevenage as a football club, as a, you know, having a chat with any of their players, the management, the coaching staff. And it was just a real love affair for Stevenage. And as I said before, the media just turned against Newcastle. And I think it's never been the same since by the Nationals. Regarding the game, I think that was the game Shearer may have started for the first time, and obviously we took the lead. Mm-hmm. But you could just sense the whole country wanted us to get beat. They wanted a shock, and that 1-1 draw was a shock. And you could see we scraped through in the replay as well. So pretty embarrassing, Norman, as a supporter. But we're through to the fifth round, so did we really care? Probably not.
Keith, how was it for you? As I say, Mark, I think, encapsulated perfectly there from a fan's perspective. I just remember thinking, what is going on? Yeah, when Kenny Dalglish pops up on Newsnight, you're thinking the world's gone mad. But then, you know, it's 2020 and we've got Donald Trump as president now. So, hey, maybe this was a precursor for it. But what was it like, you know, as I say, inside the club? And do you think it affected you in any way?
I don't think it affected us. You know, it sort of drove us on a little bit, although we did draw the first game, you know, 1-1. But I remember, obviously you know, Kenny Dalglish was full of emotion there, because he was obviously there at Hillsborough on that, you know, sad day. And there was a whole sort of talk about, in terms of Stevenage ground, could they get the fans in? And he was obviously... you know, quite worried about that side of things. And I think Stevenage, from what I remember, I think Stevenage sort of agreed that they would play the game at St. James's Park at first, and then they went back on this. And, you know, Kenny obviously wasn't happy about that because, you know, of what had happened in the past. But, you know, it was what it was. You know, we went down there, and as you say, Alan... Yeah, I was lucky. I actually put the cross in for Alan's goal after about 3 minutes, and you sort of thought, right, well, you know, that's the perfect start for us. We can go on and win this game. And I think Giuliano Graziola equalised. But it was one of them that we, you know, it is a banana skin. You know, you only have to look at results over the years, FA Cup. You know, you can just get freak results. You know, even going back to Newcastle with Ronnie Radford all those years ago, and you know, Alexis Sutton United in the Conference League, putting out the, you know, Coventry, who were the cup holders. You know, so there's been many upsets over the years. So you just don't want to be on the end of one of them. And you know, we obviously got the draw. We weren't sort of desperately clinging on just for a draw. I think we were going out to try and win the game, but you know, they more or less, you know, clung on and you know, we couldn't get the winner. But I think the replay, we won 2-1, but I think it was comfortable enough, because we were 2-0 up, but they might have scored sort of late, very, very late on, and just made it a nervy last few minutes. But at the end of the day, it was job done. You know, we got through to the next round, and you know, we were just happy. You know, a lot of us just weren't happy of the antics coming out of Stevenage at the time. And I think it was maybe more their manager than anyone, who was it Paul Fairclough. So we just weren't happy with that. So we were just happy that we managed to get through and, you know, into the next round.
No doubt. I remember Fairclough coming in for a fair amount of stick, that's for sure, from Newcastle fans. And obviously Stevenage did dump Newcastle out of the FA Cup in 2011, I believe. So there you go. They got their revenge of sorts, I suppose. So Keith, you played in all the matches other than the quarter-final against Barnsley and obviously the final. But, you know, I think we'll go into recollections of the semi-final against Sheffield United first, because I mean, don't know if this is the same for Mark, but for me, the opportunity to get the FA Cup final was just, it was huge. It was something as a kid that I'd always, you know, the FA Cup was magical, as cliche as that sounds. And Newcastle, I don't think Newcastle had been in a semi-final since they actually reached the final in 1974. I might be wrong then, Mark will correct me if I am. But I just remember it being a really tense game. The atmosphere seemed tense. It was quite overcast, if I remember correctly. And it was just a huge relief to get the win in. I don't know, what's your take on it?
Yeah, you know, as you say, the only game I didn't play was the Barnsley game, and that was due to a head injury that may have happened in Dublin. So I can thank Alan Shearer for that one. So I that was the only game that I obviously didn't play. But the semi final was a huge affair. You know, Old Trafford, you know, obviously fantastic stadium, and the atmosphere was incredible. And when we got that goal, you know, the noise that day when Alan scored was absolutely incredible. And it was just, it wasn't a great performance by us. You know, they had some chances as well. You know, we could have maybe gone on and scored more, but you know, it's always a tense game when it finishes 1-0. You know, you're biting your nails right to the very end. But it, you know, we were just happy that we managed to get through. You know, we were obviously, you know, very strong favourites, because Sheffield United were a club that were in the Championship at the time. So, you know, we were strong favourites to actually win the game. So it was just a relief to actually get to the final. You know, as I remember, it was just a fantastic occasion. Sunday afternoon, I had loads of family over at it, and you know, just to you know, get through and think, right, we've got an FA Cup final to look forward to, because as we know, the league form was very poor. So it was sort of something that, you know, give us a little bit of hope that season, the cup run.
Did you have a pint afterwards?
Well, we headed straight back on the coach back up to Newcastle. So I may or may not have had a few sherbets that night.
Yeah, well, Mark, continuing you, the mate, cup run, obviously we beat a, you know, a decent Tranmere side. I'm sure David Kelly and Liam O'Brien might have played that day for them. Yeah, and obviously both were legends in their own right for, as we mentioned before, you know, the transformation under Kevin Keegan in the earlier years before Keith arrived. But yeah, it's funny because the goalkeeper was a lad called Steve Simonson, who ended up being, I think he might have been the record transfer for a goalkeeper probably that summer. And he's a lad who I used to play football with as a kid. So it was quite surreal supporting your team, watching a lad you grew up with playing football with, you know, trying to keep Shearer and Co out. So a little story from that. But the Barnsley game, I mean, you know, everything ticked that day. We beat them comfortably 3-1. But the Sheffield United game, as you say, I mean, everyone loved going to Old Trafford anyway. And I remember we had that triple tier stand down the touchline. It was just bouncing. The actual upper tier was bouncing. And I'm not good with heights. So I was fortunate that I was in the bottom tier of that. But you were looking up above you and you could see it bouncing. You were thinking, oh, I'm glad I'm not there. But the noise was incredible. And it went up another notch when Shearer scored. But we didn't play well. Keith's right, we didn't play well that day. I remember Wayne Quinn went through on goal a couple of occasions and we ended up signing him a couple of years later. But he went through.
That was probably my fault because I think I let him go. Because he was on my side of the pitch, so I think that was me and my fault. So thank you.
Anderson again going through a similar move. He went through it and he seemed to. I don't know whether he tripped over his hairband, but he just had no control over the ball. And but hey, we got through. It was a scrappy goal in the end. But what an occasion! It's funny as well though because a lot I travelled down with. Half-time pints, and he decided to try and sneak his back into the stand, and he basically got marched out, and he got arrested, and the coach waited for him, and the police station just wouldn't let him leave. He had to travel, make his own way home, then go back down to court on the Monday, so it was an absolute nightmare for him, all that over trying to sneak a pint into the ground, you know, but brilliant memories, and obviously we had the cup final to look forward to.
Absolutely, and that's where we'll head to straight from here, because obviously Keith, you missed the final. Just tell us what happened, I guess, and you know how it obviously felt missing out on such a huge occasion, and also why Alessandro Pistone was selected at right back that day to play up and come up against Mark Overmars. Tell me if there's any logic in that. But yeah, just how it was for you, mate.
Well, I actually got injured at White Hart Lane about 3 weeks before the final. And I went in after the game, and at White Hart Lane, they actually have a, you know, where it went down onto the running track. I landed on the grass bit and twisted my ankle. So I was sort of carried off and straight into Spurs, and they had an X-ray machine there. So it was X-ray and everything, and you know, it seemed fine. So I was sort of struggling for the next sort of 3 weeks. But I remember having a fitness test the day before the final, because I knew I was going to play. If I was fit, I was going to play, because Warren Barton ended up playing on the right side, I think, of mm-hmm. right wing. So I knew that I would have played. And my fitness test consisted of just trying to block tackle. And that was it. 2 seconds, the fitness test is over, because I knew I wasn't right. I didn't actually know that there was actually a broken bone in my foot, which was to give me problems for when I came back after for pre-season and everything. And, you know, it was something that would never show up until you had an MRI. It never shows up in an X-ray. So it was so disappointing, you know. I'd obviously played my part in most of the games, you know, all the way through to the final. So to actually miss out, and, you know, you're just sitting in the stand at Wembley that day watching the game and just wishing you could be out there. And, you know, we were very average that day. You know, Arsenal were just too good. You know, they were a fantastic side with great players. Overmars and was it Anelka scored the 2 goals. You know, I know how good those players were. So yeah, Pistone played right back. You know, to be fair, there's not many people can keep up with Mark Overmars.
No.
You know, certainly nobody had the pace in our back line that was as quick as him. So it was obviously going to be hard for Pistone to do that. But, you know, he was sensational on the day, Overmars, for me. He was such a difference, you know. So it was very, very difficult to watch for me, because, You know, obviously, you know, I wasn't involved because of injury, and you know, as I say, the worst thing for me was that I knew that if I was fit, I would have played. So you know, everyone sort of, you know, it's like growing up and watching. You know, it's obviously not the same nowadays where you grew up and you were watching FA Cup final day from 9 o'clock in the morning all the way through, and that's what I grew up watching. And here I was, chance to play an FA Cup final, and it was taken away from me with injury. So yeah, it was disappointment, but I don't think we can have any qualms about the result that day. You know, the better side won.
No, absolutely no doubt. It's interesting you saying that there about, you know, watching the FA Cup final as a kid and it being on from sort of the coverage starting at 9 a.m. You've just been glued to the telly all day and it being this huge occasion. And I think it's almost like the late 90s were kind of the pinnacle in terms of the FA Cup and how it was perceived, because obviously you have a couple of years later, Man United not putting a team in because in the World Club Championship, and then the so-called bigger sides starting to feel weakened teams. And it kind of, for me, it took a little bit of the magic away. And it has picked up in recent years, don't get me wrong. But I think I can only just imagine being the age of that you were then, what, 22, 23, and missing out. I mean, God, it must have just been absolutely devastating for you, mate. So my sympathy, and I'm glad you got to win the League Cup a few years later to make up for it.
I can't really elaborate on what Keith said about the game. You know, we didn't really play that well. I think Shearer might have hit the post. Yeah, he did. He hit the post, didn't he? And Davies has clipped the ball at one point. But apart from that, we were never really in the game. I wasn't there. I missed out on a ticket. I was absolutely devastated. I think we had around about 32,000-33,000 season tickets that year. And I think we got about 26,000. And I just couldn't get my head around the allocation of how the club give tickets to people I knew and not me. It was horrible. It was a horrible feeling knowing that you weren't going to go and see your team at Wembley. I ended up getting there the following season, but it's one of those. I just remember watching it in my mate's garden. He bought his telly out because it was such a glorious day, and he bought his telly out into his garden and sat there in the blazing sunshine. And it was just massively disappointing not to be there, and it was hugely disappointing not to win it. But in a roundabout way, you know, I think you could sense with the selection and also the likes of Darren Peacock weren't even named in the squad that day. Dalglish was really starting to rip, you know, properly starting to rip apart Keegan's side now. And, the following summer signings would certainly be interesting.
Absolutely. We'll move on to those signings quickly before we end this podcast. Pre-season 98-99, obviously a really disappointing 97-98 season. Kind of tempered by the cup run, but then again the disappointment of losing the final so convincingly. And Dalglish goes out and he signs Didi Hamann, who at this point was a German international, and Nobby Solana, who had been at Boca Juniors, where Diego Maradona had absolutely loved him. And we know how well Solana turned out for Newcastle ultimately. And obviously the French World Cup winning legend, that is Stefan Givarch, signed as well. Real kind of upheaval. And the money that Dalglish was allowed to spend would suggest that he was, you know, that the club still had faith in him. But we know that's not how it worked out. He was sacked 2 games in. And Keith, I think, is this the summer where you almost moved to Borough?
Yep. I was in the last year of my contract. The club had offered me a new 4-year contract, but I sort of just wasn't really happy with the term. So I was just, you know, trying to get a better deal. So then I got a phone call that they've accepted a bid from Middlesbrough of $3.5 million. So I went down and it was Newcastle were actually playing at the Riverside in a pre-season tournament. And bear in mind, I was still sort of struggling. I was training, but I was really struggling with the injury that forced me out of the cup final. So I went down and spoke to Brian Robson, who I obviously knew from Man United, and we agreed terms and everything, and I was to come back the next day for to do the medical. So I came back the next day and was pretty much unveiled as a Borough player before I'd even done the medical. And I went and had the medical, and then I remember Kenny Dalglish was interviewed after the pre-season game, and he knew absolutely nothing about it, about the club accepting the bid, which obviously wasn't, is not something that, you know, Newcastle covered themselves in much glory there, because, you know, when the manager doesn't know a player's leaving, you know, you've got real problems. So I remember that was the Saturday. On the Sunday, I got a phone call on the Sunday night, and it was Brian Robson, and he said that I'd failed the medical, had a broken bone in my foot, my talus bone, which is quite an awkward one to break. So they obviously, you know, couldn't go ahead with the transfer. So I rang Kenny Dalglish and explained to him that I'd failed the medical, and I sort of went, no, bad news, I failed the medical, and his word straight away was, it's not bad news for me, you're still in my plans, you know, which was fantastic to hear. But a couple of days later, which was, you know, the worst part, was the back of the Chronicle said that my career was in doubt and that I might not ever play again.
Jeez.
And this was put in the paper. I didn't know at the time, but I found out by Freddie Fletcher.
Oh.
So I obviously went mad with the club. I remember them coming down to the, I was up in the treatment room, and I looked out and I seen them coming. It was Freddie Fletcher and Freddie Shepherd. And I sprinted down to where they were coming in. And he would have been always one of them, Freddie Fletcher, to shake your hand. And I knew then that he had done this. And he put his hand out to shake my hand, and I just waved the hand away. So he knew then that I knew. But what the club then tried to do was, they'd taken the 4-year contract off the table. They said that my career was in doubt, and they tried to just offer me a 1-year. And they said, look, it's a bit of security for you. You know, and I spoke to the physios and you know, specialists, and they said that, the bone will heal and you'll be fine. You know, so it was really dirty tactics from Newcastle. And it was probably at that stage that I probably thought, I can't see a way back. You know, when the club sort of go behind your back, and this is my livelihood. And you know, bear in mind, as I say, I'm 23 years of age at the time. You know, I should have my whole career ahead of me. And yet you've got the chief executive trying to scupper that. So that was a really disappointing period for me.
Reminiscent of some of the behaviour, I guess, we see at the club now, it's absolutely shocking that they did that, and it's, you know, it wouldn't be surprised that it soured a relationship. We'll wind up in the next couple of minutes, and so what we can do is quickly just go over the fact that, obviously, you know, there's clearly something not right, and 2 games in after 2 draws, Charlton and a newly promoted Charlton at home, and then at Chelsea away, 2 draws. Dalglish has sacked him. Mark, I'll come to you first, mate. Your thoughts on the sack and the appointment of Hullett, and we'll finish off with those.
I wasn't surprised that he was sacked, because as a supporter, I did think the previous season was horrible. It was just such a, you know, despite the Barca win, despite the cup run, it just papered over many, many cracks for me. And no one was enjoying Dalglish's football by the end, and you could sense the signings that were coming in. It was just a huge, huge change, wasn't it? And it wasn't as enjoyable. But then again, as we mentioned in previous podcasts, you know, he had to follow Kevin Keegan in 5 glorious years, you know. But I think it was a surprise, the fact that he was sacked after 2 games of the season. They probably should have done it in the summer. There's no sense in sacking a manager only 2 games in. Maybe something happened behind the scenes. You know, you've got to remember as well that one of them draws was a decent one down at Chelsea, and it was just one of those where it wasn't a surprise. And then quickly, when Ruud Gullit was appointed, you were excited because he did well at Chelsea. You know, but there was stories that he had a massive ego and he was falling out with people left, right and centre. So was he the right man for Newcastle United? Well, at that point, you were hoping for this sexy football, weren't you, what he promised? But look, I think Dalglish's sort of dour football and his character, even though we're led to believe he was a great man manager and great fun, we didn't see that as supporters. And you could say it was a little bit of a relief for me. I was relieved that he was gone. And as I say, Hullett had been successful at Chelsea. I'd won them, I think, the FA Cup and the League Cup. I could be mistaken, but I'm sure he won some trophies. And, you know, something had to give, I think. And I was pleasantly happy. Yeah, I was happy with the point with Hullet.
Keith, your thoughts. We'll sign off on your thoughts on Dalglish being sacked, and I'll tell you what. We'll leave the Rudd Hullet discussion until the next podcast, because obviously it'll be really interesting to get your in-depth take on what he was like whilst you were at the club, on the ego, especially as Mark mentioned. But just, I guess, just how you felt when Kenny was sacked.
I mean, when Kenny sort of went, you know, I was obviously I was injured, you know, with a broken bone in my foot, you know. But I mean, I was disappointed because, you know, in terms of, I know what you say in terms of the fans, they don't see what us players see. You know, we respect them. You know, when you talk about Kevin Keegan and you're thinking, how do we follow him? And you pluck Kenny Dalglish, you go, wow, you know, what a big name he is. You know, so it was just, you know, as you say, it's such a hard act to follow in terms of where Kevin had actually taken the club from and where he'd taken them to in such a short space of time. That was always going to be tough to follow. But, you know, the players loved Kenny. I had a fantastic relationship with him. So, you know, I was disappointed to see him go. And, you know, as you say, bear in mind, you know, after drawing away at Chelsea, you know, decent result, you know, two games in, you know, it seems like such a stupid decision that you get two draws. I know the first game of the season you expect to beat a Charlton at home, but, you know, we hadn't lost. You know, we got a good point at Chelsea. You know, it just seemed a strange time to actually sack a manager, you know, because I think they probably had it in mind to sack him and were expecting us to go down to Chelsea and get beat. So then when you get a sort of credible draw, they think, oh, well, we'll just have to see it through and sack him anyway. You know, so I was disappointed, but, you know, I suppose that's just football for you. And the previous season, you know, apart from, as you say, Barcelona and obviously the cup run. I think if we had won the cup, you know, that would have sort of been absolutely incredible, because I don't think you could have sacked the manager two games in if we'd have won the cup when we haven't lost. You know, so it was disappointing because, as I say, I had a great relationship with him, but you can sort of understand as well where the club were going, because, you know, the football obviously wasn't as exciting as it was when Kevin was manager.
Yeah, I was very surprised that he went, but it's really interesting to hear that. Obviously, I guess as a squad, you still believed in him. And you know, it seems like a good place to end this instalment. And we'll definitely move on. I'm very, as I say, very excited and interested to hear your take on Rudd Hullet, who, to all intents and purposes, does seem to have been a divisive figure when he was at Newcastle. And we'll leave it there then, lads. Thanks ever so much to you two. Huge pleasure talking with you again. Listeners, massive thanks to you, especially a big thanks to our patrons for your ongoing sponsorship, which allows us to do things such as this. Cheers, everyone, and we will speak soon.